I do have a cold, by the way, so if you hear me making cold noises, that'll be why.
Brrr.
So chilly. Okay. There's no what happens without Stu.
Yeah, we should probably start with the fact that we're hoping Stu will join us actually for maybe the second half or the end of this reflect, but no promise. Mm.
So listeners, you're in for us just waiting now. From now, we're just going to be waiting in silence until Stuart introduces the podcast.
I don't think Stu has
ever introduced one of these. I feel like I've done one, and that's saying something.
All right, Mr. Showboat, go on, you take it away. You introduce this reflect.
Two times a charm. Hello everyone, welcome to our penultimate reflect ever, potentially. Whoa. If the show actually continues as we're planning it. God, that feels weird to say aloud, but here in the room, not in the room, proverbially in the room, we have got Tom, Ali and myself to discuss what happened over Wild Charge.
Pick over the bones.
A very wild charge.
The
a
wildest.
Charge that kept getting wilder and wilder,
could
I would say.
Could be a charged episode. So we are going to be reflecting on questions that we've received.
This is somebody delaying finding an email, if ever I've heard one.
Yeah, am I the only...
This is filling for phone loading, if I've ever heard it.
I am loving buffering times, you know? Don't you all love buffering times? No, okay, so I'm on the Discord, and here we are going... Here's where we have the questions. I think I might just go through them in order. Is that fine for everyone?
Crazy. Never been done before. Love to see it.
Fine with me. Yeah.
Let's jump in. And maybe we'll have our own questions for each other as we go. Okay. Snowfox0806 on the Discord asks, for anyone, anyone, please. I have absolutely loved seeing the amount of character development the characters have gone through. What would you say the biggest difference is between your character now versus them from the start of the podcast? Biggest difference for me, Brandy is 3 months older, which a lot of people thought could not happen. She could not get older, but here we are, 3 months older from the start of the podcast. It's tough, because I would say, actually, all of the characters have developed in multiple ways rather than just one, but I think probably the aspect that's most obvious, certainly for this Wild Charge, to make it sort of Wild Charge specific, is that Brandy has become independent from Gary. There is now no Gary hanging over her, and she's in no way tied to that man. And overall, she knows and has hopefully learnt that actually any person who has that much control over how she feels is actually not healthy, and she won't let anyone dictate that to her again. You know, she almost kind of got over it, I would say, at the end of Sky Attack. There was still that question of like, oh, well, Gary is the stronger trainer, Gary's the Pokemon champion, but now Brandy has sort of answered that question. It actually mattered to her less, which I think you kind of see in Wild Charge, that she doesn't actually care too much about being the Pokemon champion once she's actually done it. They move on quite quickly. And obviously events with General Phillips and stuff take over from
there. Yeah, being attacked by a Zapdos will do that.
It will do that. But it was more kind of about getting the key than being Pokemon League champion.
I think for Kenny, from the start of the series, it's just been a continual kind of loss of innocence for Kenny. It's like, you know, this living in the grey thing that Stu particularly likes. Not seeing the world as in such sort of simplistic ways as, you know, good and bad and right and wrong and light and dark. That's been the biggest change for Kenny. He was very sheltered at the start of the show, and now he's certainly seen more of the world. And to make it Wild Charge specific, I think it's more from a leadership point of view, something that was definitely started in Cosmic Power arc. But, you know, you sort of saw Kenny's response to, like, General Phillips passed away to sort of get people out, and he was the one that kind of maybe had his head more on than anyone else at that moment in time. And I think that's kind of, he's shown more of a willingness to step up and make decisions without the other two kind of influencing. And he's sort of like, well, I'll make these decisions and I'll deal with the repercussions later. And he's kind of okay with people not really liking the decisions he's made, because he's had that so frequently, whether he thinks he's making the right ones or not.
Mm. Theo-wise, I feel like the big thing for Theo the entire time has been, similarly to how you were saying, Ali, about Kenny being sheltered, I think Kenny was sheltered and innocent, whilst I think Theo was sheltered and cynical. Theo pretended that they knew the world, but actually they were equally disconnected from anything that went on in the real world. Theo's big journey the whole time has always been about balance, squaring circles and bringing two things together, whether that's strength and intellect, whether that's brains and brawn, those are the same thing. Whether it's compassion and vengeance, whether
fighting
it's...
and book smarts.
Whether it's combis and the stones of the outer wall of the conclave. Theo's been trying to like make two things true at the same time and make that work, and that's manifested in loads of different ways throughout Critical Ditto. I think during Wild Charge, what's been interesting for me is that Theo got a pretty, like, in the same way that Brandy with beating Gary was kind of a pretty major conclusion to the plot that we started on, Theo and the stuff that happened in the church was kind of the big resolution of a lot of the stuff. And I think for me, both as the person playing Theo and as the person who cares about Theo's growth, is it's really easy when you have that big moment as a character for everything else after that to be a bit, what's the non-binary version of Gary, Stu and Mary Sue? There isn't one because gender, but if there was one, that's what Theo would be, because it's very easy at that point for the character to be like, well, I know everything now and I'm now above. And I think going into it, it was like, well, I'm the O of the church. Like, how do you have a character develop beyond that point? And actually it's the same, because this podcast is very humbling for characters because of the amount of fails we roll.
Yeah, and for how Stu kind of does story beats, he like finds something that we will show the tiniest little crack, and Stu be like, oh, just gonna chip away at that.
Yeah, David, certainly for Theo, this felt like a good, here's how far I've come since you met Tyler.
Big time.
Where we're going now as a trio, it's more about the character relationships between the three of us. We are going to get to a point where the trust between us will be tested to the absolute extreme, and that will be a kind of the biggest marker for the last one. Individually, as everyone's hinted at, everyone's got quite far, with Kenny with the leadership aspect and proven very much in this arc showing off their leadership with delegation to Hannah. But the fact that Kenny lost zero Pokemon in the whole of Wild Charge is a testament to your leadership
skills.
That's
just because I'm a better trainer than either of the two of you.
That's just about what I was going to say. Mm-hmm, it's such a shame that you don't have a cool title like the O of the Church or the Pokemon Champion like the two of us, but it'll come, Ali. It'll come.
Yeah, Kenny is so insignificant to the storyline, isn't he?
He really is. Certainly Formia. Got like letters after our names, but Kenny doesn't, sadly.
Theo's head of a religious cult, but I started a religious cult,
That's true. Who's the real winner?
I think Wild Charge was such a great one for weighing up character growth, because obviously both of you two fought people you literally battled with in the first, in Raindance, pretty much. I mean, I know you didn't necessarily battle Gary, Tom, but he was certainly an antagonist and he was well above you. Even Kenny, like, if you think about it, he was sort of battling against the Scolipede in Raindance, and now he's on the main boss with Cresselia. So all of us are sort of fighting our original villains in a way.
Here's a question for you, Kenny, from me. This is one of those questions I mentioned at the beginning I might throw in. Do you think Cresselia is the big bad guy, Kenny?
This is just a theory that I have, and Stu isn't actually here right now, so can't riff off it, but I think Frey, maybe anticipating Kenny's arrival, Frey is planning to force Cresselia to be the big bad guy. Frey will sort of unlock Kenny, and then Frey will try to manipulate Kenny. I would love to live in a world where Kenny and Dark Kenny can live in tandem, but I am prepared for Cresselia to be the big bad once we've defeated Frey. Stu loves, like, you know, a final stage boss battle, and that might be Cresselia.
Yeah, you've not had to kill physically any of your own Pokemon yet, so I feel like in many ways you deserve it, because some of us had to immolate our own Ubers on the screen. So just a thing that I'd love that to happen to everybody. Up next, Wimpy.
Oh no! No, we can't touch Wimpy. So Bannon on the Discord has asked a question for Stuart. So unfortunately, Bannon, Stuart is not here, but maybe Stuart will be able to answer that one when he arrives.
Should we try to guess what Stu's answer would be?
Go on. We can. Why don't we guess what Stu's answer would be? So for Stuart, when did you realise you had to sacrifice an NPC, and why was it Phillips? I think Stu realised he had to sacrifice Phillips from the moment he introduced Phillips. Back in Foul Play. He knew. He was like, this is not a character I want to continue to voice.
I think we probably could hazard a guess at this, because I think Stu had set up this Zapdos charge being pretty lethal, and then as soon as Tom was like, Brandy's gonna step in, Stu was like, I can't have that happen. You look at the other people there, the other special defenders. He's not going to sacrifice one of the kids.
Yeah, I think in this podcast, we are quite brutal, but if you're a kid, you're probably safe. Hannah is not going to die.
You've got kid armor.
I also feel like it's interesting because I think throughout Wild Charge and already, no spoilers here, but already going into the next arc, we're kind of giving everybody the end of their narrative in some way. Like every character has had it. Hannah had a really good one here. Bash had a really good one here. Yeah. Some happier than others. But when Phillips, I don't know, this is just me speaking as a person who listens to Stu rather than Stu himself, but Phillips obviously got his final moment with Boromir Draws when they were going into the stadium. But that was like a 70% finale in comparison to what, say, Hannah got, or say Hedrold got in bloody Against the Battle with Vaughn. It feels like Vaughn. It feels like, as a Vaughn, Vince Vaughn, it feels like maybe it was like a nice way to stick the landing.
Yes, I think you're right. And also Phillips saying to Brandy that, like, you know, you always have a choice in the episode beforehand, and then making the choice that he did. Because if I remember correctly, Stu edited the episode where Phillips said you always had a choice, and then we recorded the episode where he sacrificed himself, like, almost a day after it. So I think he must have had that in the back of his mind, that this is a great lesson to teach Brandy.
I also think, because of who Phillips is, I was actually saying this to Stu, I was like, it's actually genius, because Phillips is the, I know how mad this sounds, folks, but Phillips is the mentor character of the Special Defenders. He is the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the group.
He's the one who started it, essentially.
He's quite useless, yeah. But at least he was sort of who we're relying on. He's someone who knows about the Pokemon League, knows a lot about the history, you know, has a connection to Formia outside of just, I want to become a Pokemon trainer. So has that sort of breadth of knowledge. So after, I would say probably if you put Kanan as our number one mentor figure, then possibly Hillary as a second as well. Both of those characters are now not options, so it sort of made sense. And I suppose Stu is thinking that I want the stakes to be high, and I want to know everyone to know that no one is safe, so let's do Phillips. Bannon also writes, if the dog in the background was bigger, would the Sofloatzels have gotten a different Pokemon than Poochyena, like a Mabostiff? I'm going to say yes. Yes, we would have done.
If the dog in the background was...
I think it's because there was a dog barking in the background when Poochyena... As in, like,
oh yeah, my next door neighbor's awful, awful dogs that I despise.
God, hope they don't listen to the podcast.
Well, they might actually, because the walls are very thin.
And then for everyone, this is going to be an interesting question. Actually, thank you for asking, Bannon. Why did Tyler have to die? The dice decided, but Stu let the Scyther fly away, and then one of you made him come back. I like how they're not naming and shaming there. They're just saying, one of us three here.
Yeah, that was tough. I don't know how I felt about that in the moment, to be honest.
As the person, so I edited the episode, and I was very torn, in fact, during to edit that episode when it came up, because I felt like, oh, we were about to let Tyler go away, and then the dice roll, it sort of felt like we, as a joke, said, oh, maybe he should roll, and then Tyler rolled a fail. And we'd have said that if it was a fail, it would be death. And then it was sort of like a sort of thing like that. And I was wondering, do I just cut this out, actually? Do we need any of this? And could we just retcon it and say that Tyler actually just flew away or went on his merry way? But I sort of kept it in because we do want to make sure that we stay... This is going to sound a bit pretentious, but honest in what the podcast is. And, like, it is a tabletop role-playing game, and it does... role, yeah. It does depend on what the dice do, and to cut it kind of felt like I'd be being warping and trying to change what is just part of tabletop role-playing games. And, like, we want this to feel like this can be what it feels like when you're playing the game at home, if other people play it, like, this kind of stuff happens. But I do definitely regret, because I actually spoke about this with Stu when the episode came out, and was like, oh, what do you think of this moment? Can you listen to it and see what you think? And he was saying he wouldn't have changed it. He wouldn't have said to cut out the fact that Tyler had died. But what he might have wanted to do is do a bit of extra, just given Tyler a bit more of a moment, let's just let the moment sit a bit more and say, okay, if that's what's happened, we should give Tyler his kind of due and then give him something or describe it and try and make it more clear that it was mirroring what happened to Seto Kappa and that the two were sort of linked, and it was, or focus a bit more on the Scyther and go into it a bit more, because currently in what it ended up being was quite skimmed over, joked about. But how do you feel, David?
In defense of it, for a sort of in three-pronged defense, one is, as Theo, the last time Theo came up against a major antagonist properly beyond the church and like, ignoring that part, was Ulma in the core. And it was a very Theo decision for Ulma to be allowed to walk away and rebuild their lives separately from the plot. That decision I don't think could be done again. I think that that's a very morally ambiguous decision you can't do too many times without a character just kind of looking a bit, not that Theo did the deed, but I think it was a scene in which Theo was the main person there. It can't happen again where Theo just lets the bad person go. The second for me is that I can't, like, it's just thinking as Tyler, after everything that has happened, like created the Extreme Ball Project, murdered people, had effectively allowed Frey to frame a major organization to create this war that was effectively all just a ruse for everything to happen. And when we were doing it, I remember thinking, there is no life for Tyler after this. Like, if you are a war criminal, Tyler's a fun character. Tyler had done some terrible, terrible things in this podcast. And I'm not here to be like, murder all war criminals. But I am here to say, narratively, where do you go?
Also, it was all for reasons of like wanting to be a hero, wanting to be the main man of Formia. So it wasn't even like it was for the good of the region, as he was claiming.
No.
It was nice that a character got their comeuppance, but not from the main characters having to make a decision on life or death,
yes. In,
which is obviously a very murky thing to be doing if you're the main character of a Pokemon role-playing podcast.
I'm kind of thrilled that at the end of this arc, particularly in that plot line, we didn't have to make many death decisions this arc because the stakes are very high, but we don't want to become mass murderers as a cast.
Exactly, like, exactly.
We were not the ones who decided. Yeah. Like, Vaan was effectively already dead. We did not have to make a decision on Tyler. We didn't really make a decision on Elaine or on Moustache Guy, who I'll never remember the name of. Cornelius.
Cornelius. You played Cornelius. Him. David, you brought him to life.
Listen, if I remembered the name of every man I brought to life, I... But all of these, like, all of it's like, I think that it's nice. There is a moment now in the plot where the chickens are coming home to roost for the decisions we made. And this comes back to Phillips and the decision about choices. And quite frankly, it's kind of felt like it's hung there since the Baleton episode. The decision that maybe we're not fully in the right. What does that mean? What does it mean if we win? But there are some real. But it's quite nice for it not to always just be like, when there's a loss, we have to kill someone or we are directly responsible for someone's
exactly.
death.
Finally, Bannon asks, are you guys voicing all the Pokemon? I mean, some are obvious, but sometimes I just can't tell. That's a very nice compliment. We actually hire a voiceover artist. It's a Smeargle, and they do all the voices. Dark Holson writes, for Ali, was making Kenny autistic coded on purpose or an accident? I may be reading too much into it, but his butter sandwiches and inability to read social cues made me think of ASD or ADHD. My son loves Kenny because he sees himself in the character, so even if it's an accident, thank you.
Well, you're more than welcome, and I am thrilled that your son sees himself in Kenny. No, it wasn't a conscious decision. Kenny's developed over time from... The sort of initial premise of Kenny was to be aloof and a bit non-conventional. And he, I think, has become a lot more fleshed out and real. And I think that's the sort of autistic side of Kenny comes from me trying to play him as genuine and as real in every single moment as I possibly can. I think a lot of the people that he's met along the way, and he's very influenced by the people that he's met, I think he's become a lot more like Brandy and Theo since those sort of early episodes, and similarly has been shaped by his interactions with his family and with the What Would Kenny Do's and with Hannah and a lot of the other special defenders. In the same way that I don't think we ever spoke about Theo being non-binary as like, oh, this would be a good thing to just have a non-binary character. It was a decision from David to play a character non-binary in a storyline that would allow them to flourish, not to necessarily explore what non-binarism is. And I think that's how it's happened with Kenny as well. Because this is not the first time that Kenny's sort of autistic side has been discussed and mentioned. And I'm very conscious that I don't want to say or do anything that would undermine or devalue what people see in him. Kenny's just Kenny, And I'm going to try to continue to play him as someone trying to find his way in a world that he is understanding as he grows up.
I actually very much admire your ability to play Kenny Ali. I feel like Kenny, for me, I'm always like, oh, Ali is just such a strong connection to your character. Mm. You always seem like you know exactly how Kenny would respond in a situation, whereas with Brandy, I agonise so much.
Even if sometimes the answer is that Kenny doesn't know how to respond to a situation, because that is a very human response. Like, no one knows what to do the whole time. And I think all three of our characters have had moments of indecision. It's trying to be in character whilst they don't know what to do, rather than I, as an actor, don't know how my character would respond. And so that's why I think the moments where Kenny has relied on other people is kind of when he's unsure. What I never intended for Kenny was for him to be the big, epic, empathetic, emotional speech kind of guy. That's not something I thought would happen, but this is the niche that I found myself in, and I'm trying to do
justice. I swear you gave an empathetic, big superhero speech in like episode 2 of this podcast, Ali. I love that you set out to do it.
I didn't mean to.
But yes, thank you very much, Dark Holson, and shout out to your son. Next up, Several Seals writes, prompted... I know, which is a great...
Well, each individual name. Seal has a question?
No.
Or they're a bunch of seals in a trench coat pretending to be an adult.
They've come together and they've said, prompted by a certain recent event, one of the things that surprised me most when I started listening to the podcast was the inclusion of people straight up dying as a possible stake, since that's not something I usually associate with Pokemon. Did you have any discussion about the pros and cons of this particular element of the story when you set out? Has there been more or less than you expected?
My response to this is that I think the first death we had was that guy who died on the tower, like in episode, the guy who gave...
Yeah, the church member.
The church member died.
Peitang.
But Peitang, I think, was the first...
Peitang was the first named character.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I think we had, like, victims to create terrorist mood. Hello, Stu.
Hello, guys.
Stuart Clark has joined as we talk about death.
The harbinger thereof.
Oh, my goodness.
I think Peitang was the moment where I felt like we had a mood decision as a podcast. Do we have named characters die in the field of battle? Like, that felt like a very different thing to, like, setting a JRPG first town where somebody's going to die.
I would say that Peitang, for me, feels the most anachronistic death in the whole podcast. That for me just feels like the moment where I think if we were to go back and or rewrite the podcast, I don't think we'd let Peitang die. I think they would just be unconscious, or they would, because that happened on like a Brandy fail as well, where basically Brandy failed but still managed to defeat the Shedinja but by Peitang. It was sort of a weird moment. I think you're right, David. That sort of opened the door of like, oh, this could be an option.
But I would argue, Tom, that the correct place for that to be would have been Hillary, which came only episodes later. And actually, the whole Peitang thing jumped the gun.
Do you think Hillary's death would have happened without Peitang's almost accidental death? I think that did give us the option of like, okay, we could do a death. Because previously, I think we'd all assumed, and we hadn't had a discussion about death within the podcast beforehand at all.
No, we hadn't.
Which probably, we doing another campaign again, we'd probably talk about like, what's the genre in that sense.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Like, vibe check. Yes, yes.
But we were sort of thinking it was a One Piece style situation where you could get blown up by a bomb that you're holding and appear 10 episodes later with like a bandage around your arm, like, yeah, guys, can't believe I survived that. But then I think since then we've been quite sparing with named character deaths. Like, I'd say
we've had less death than I would have anticipated, considering that we had one very early on. As I said, that I wouldn't underestimate the significance of that unnamed church acolyte dying in Rain Dance.
Yes, of course, episode 1.
Yeah, we establish within first arc people can and will die. And that was such a significant moment for Theo. I still remember the first proper like little argument that the Sifloatzels had, where Theo sort of had a go at Kenny and said, like, you don't have the rule of empathy because I saw someone die in my arms. And like, for me, Ali, I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's so true. I totally forgot about it. But obviously it registered enough for David to sort of say it as Theo.
Something that I can't believe I'm going to quote a cursed woman, but like I can't help but think of we've effectively established Pei Pang as our Cedric Diggory, and I always remember that when Cedric died, there was always the kerfuffle about like, oh, the first like big death in this like children's book, what does that mean? And I remember that the evil wench who wrote those books said, well, the book started on a double murder, like the books begin on the killing of two parents. I don't know why you're surprised, and I think the first episode of this podcast was an act of terrorism. I don't think we should be too surprised that as a result of that there have been casualties, but I think all the ones we've done have been quite potent, useful deaths that are also meaningful and explored,
except for the Tyler one, which we mentioned earlier. I would also say there's quite a difference as well with the what's more challenging in the podcast is what the characters are wrestling with them doing the actual delivering of death or not death, because we've had characters die, a lot of the sort of villains of the podcast die, but the main characters are usually attempting to save them. I'm only thinking about like the main culprits I'm thinking of that the characters have had to deal with are Togekiss and Golduck,
and we grappled with both of those so intensely,
and the comeuppance of those decisions are yet to be fully realized. I mean, we've recorded a bit ahead, as we mentioned earlier. We try to make it not feel like empty, because you know, letting your big villain go obviously comes with a sort of session of risk. They may come back and try and kill you again, they may not learn the lesson, but we also want to be very clear that actually making sure they don't live, killing a villain also comes with consequences and risks too.
You can see why Disney have so many villains kill themselves, don't they, like through accidental means. You can see why they
Clayton
did
it. Stabbing at the vines. I'm like,
Gaston swinging on the on the spires.
Just makes sense. But yes, welcome to Stuart Clark. There's one question that we would love to get your response. We made our guesses about it, but it was really for you, and it was from Bannon. Bannon asked, when did you realise you had to sacrifice an NPC, and why Phillips?
Oh gosh, this is a heavy reflect, isn't it? We are like, but I suppose that's appropriate for the one before the final arc. I mean, listen, I was never like, we have to sacrifice an NPC. Me going into this arc thinking there's too many people. I mean, I did think that. I did think there are too many people here and I don't know how to control this crowd of characters, but I sort of figured we'd roll with it and it would be fine. In terms of when the Phillips thing started, I'll be honest, I think it was, oh, I've forgotten his name. How awful. Boromir Draw. When the Boromir Draw vignette happened, when Tom wrote that vignette about Boromir Draw sacrificing himself, and I sort of thought whenever everyone brought their vignettes to the table, and I really wanted to kind of pay all of them off in some way, which kind of did. I think probably we could have done more with the Stinky Hero. I mean, he revealed some stuff about the lore of the tree and the
roots.
So could
I, Stu. So, you know.
But, you know, I think if there was an ideal world in which we could have involved Tyrannius Chunder more in the Wild Charge arc, but it just didn't play out. But I was really happy with how he paid off David's vignette about the extreme balls that had been kept by the League and the people, the poker powers that had been captured at the League and how they were used as weapons. And then we brought in the Blarb and Farb stuff. I thought that was great. And then Tom's was very much focused on Boromir Draw, which surprised me. It was not a character that I had immediately thought would be associated with this arc in any way.
I bet you didn't think Tom could write 6 pages on Boromir Draw, but he did.
But he did!
But he freaking did, and he read them all. He read every single word.
Yeah, he did. And he ended it. He surprised me with the ending as well, which was, again, the death of Boromir Draw, who had sacrificed himself. And I was like, gosh, okay, what do we do with this? And I think I remember something in the vignette being about Boromir being in war and having fought in the wars before. And I thought, well, Phillips fought in those wars as well. That was one of the few things we know about his character. He was obviously a general before he worked at the Pokemon League. So I thought, right, there's got to be a connection there. And that's why I put the bit in when Brandy was going to the Pokemon League champion match about the sort of previous champions and the holograms so that Brandy could see that. And I made sure that I gave Phillips some dialogue in that section about seeing Boromir and reflecting on Boromir's choice, his sacrificial choice and what that means, and thinking that Boromir had no friends and that's why he made the sort of sacrificial choice, and Phillips wrestling with that and being like, well, I was his friend, did he know that? So I think from that point on, from entering the Championship Dome and having that scene.
Oh, David's got your number, Stu.
That's exactly what I said. Yeah.
Is that what you said? Right,
David's got your number.
I was like, it felt like an 80% Stu finale. Like, you'd given such 100% finales to everyone else. I knew that something had to be coming.
Absolutely correct, yes. I was like, well, something's got to happen. And unfortunately, it feels like something has to happen quite drastically to Phillips. It didn't necessarily mean his death. It's just that he had to make a choice.
Just Brandy's plan was so bad that it did mean
so it. Hey, Brandy's plan gave an opportunity. That's what Brandy's plan did. It was just about him having to make a decision. And also reflecting on Brandy, because she was going through similar stuff. Brandy, throughout this arc, and arguably the previous arc, has been going through this, as Ali correctly identified in the last episode of Wild Charge, this self-sacrificial, hell-bent, I'm going to off myself if that's what needs to be done. And I was like, well, maybe Brandy needs to be confronted with the reality of that and actually see what that means and see what it's like to be left behind in order to fully understand her decision in that respect. Yeah. If she is to go on to make anything like that, she needs to have the full context.
Stu just can't let the characters want to do stuff without being like, oh, have you thought about the consequences? And some might say good GMing. Others say controlling behaviour. But we'll move on to Sam Meadow writes, for anyone, could you have seen the story being anywhere close to where it is now if you guys had decided to go after Team Mystic instead of Team Nautilus back in the Foul Play arc?
That's very fun.
That is a
great question.
God, so what? So if Team Mystic were the equivalent of Team Nautilus in our story?
It's so difficult to imagine a world in which Frey isn't the main protagonist. Now looking at it, I'm like, surely Frey would have found a way to escape and still been there, but that almost would have done a disservice to it. I think if we'd have gone after Mystic, then probably Helsing might have been the main villain. Villains,
yeah,
because that's the that's maybe the most obvious.
That's Varn's fever dream, Ali.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what he was hoping for.
I couldn't see Nautilus being the main bad guys.
I don't know really,
but then I wonder if Eliza's really strong. Eliza could control the weather, which is like an insanely underrated power in all media.
Yeah, like Pelipper's OU just because it could control the weather. So
whoever we would then have left in the background, we would have expanded their story and we would have expanded their reach. So like, for instance, someone like Eliza, I would imagine, what do we know about her? She's a pirate, she controls the weather. Okay, that's huge. She could get fleets from other regions. She could be recruiting across the Pokemon world and bringing this armada to Formia.
I want to see that storyline, Stu.
Well, there you go. See, she's bringing this massive typhoon into Formia for some reason because she worships Tornadus, the weather god. I don't know.
Helsing would have been a much darker and they would be sort of doing the bidding of another sort of legendary, or I could see us all on an archipelago islands being hunted by Helsing hunters, and maybe Heron would have been one of the big bad guys in that.
Yeah.
Heron with Barry Bolcutt, because there was a connection there, and it would have been so different had we gone after Team Mystic first. Frey might have been a good guy.
You could have brought Frey back. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? But very fun to think about, for sure.
That's the joy of tabletop role-playing. Next question. For the group, what is your favourite story element that was said as a joke but became canonical and impactful? Snowball answered by saying Tallahassee, and I would say agreed. But are there any other sort of jokey things that we came up with?
Russian basketball players for me. Anatoly and Vlad are absolutely my favourite joke that will never die.
Yeah, it's usually the double acts. It's like Blarb and Farb. We liked the Kermit voice.
Abel, Forth and Ainsley.
Usually the double acts, like the random people we sort of bring in for like fun.
Two people don't have assigned characters in the scene and you're like, let's see what happens. Let's see what they do with that. To be honest, my favourite thing that started as a joke and became canon was Brandy's dad is a Celio, because that was, I think that was a joke at first, wasn't it?
It was in for episode one.
It was episode
Her dad
one.
Was Celio.
Celio the Celio, and like, oh, that's Brandy's dad. Well, literally became one of the most heartbreaking episodes of the entire podcast. So yeah, in terms of sort of like 0 to 100, it's probably that for me.
And then Bannon asks again, jokingly, Tom, are you aware that you're harming yourself with your own ideas? Like the harm Wimpy takes while saving Gary and the minus one because of the lightning. They were both your ideas. Yes. Yes, Bannon, I realise this. But the thing is, you've got to come up with something before Stu comes up with something worse for your character. Just, it's funnier if you do it to yourself, and he won't dig too deep into, no, it should be worse. Snowball then writes, why did you kill or near kill so many fan favourite characters? Phillips, Tyler, Luann was nearly killed. I think we've kind of answered this
Is Tyler a fan favourite?
According to Snowball.
People love scarves. People love scarves.
I actually say, Snowball, we've answered this one really in terms of the Tyler question earlier and the stuff about death.
I would also say the fan favourite characters are favourites for the Sir Floatzels as well, and that's the way to add narrative stakes. It's not no big difficult decision if some random NPC is in danger, but if it's someone that we have a connection to, then that's far more interesting to listen to and play.
Snowball also asked then to you, Ali, in all caps, what happened to Tyronius?
Don't know.
Are we going to see Tyronius again?
I've got a guess. Here's my thought. Okay, I think it's epilogue stuff. Ooh. I think Calico came down and saved Tyronius Chunder.
They did have a moment,
didn't
they?
They did have a moment, and they are driving the Flash Money away together and being like, do you know what? We can be our own people. We're our own crew.
In my vignette, there was also an unmentioned character whose voice Tyronius recognised.
I think that voice, because that's making me think it was Calico. That's just my personal guess.
Just two true blue pirates sailing the sky.
Do they
the
still have
mullet.
Mr. and Mrs. N on board? No, I think they're still aboard the Flash Mullet. I don't think they were on the council.
They're free to live and love on the ship then. That's a brand new beginning for them as well.
Bannon asks, not sure if this is a question for the Reflect, but ever since Theo used Zygarde to fight Zapdos, this keeps bugging me. If Theo had the Zygarde since the submission arc, why didn't they use it in the fight against Togekiss in Destiny Bond? David.
I can absolutely answer this, guys, because I've thought about this long and hard, because Zygarde is a dragon type and Togekiss is a fairy type. That is why Theo did not use Zygarde, because Zygarde was a one-off. There was a brief moment when Togekiss turned to psychic where I went, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. But then we did all the other stuff with the balls and the things. And so it just was like, it was either Zygarde was, in my mind, Zygarde was going to be the final line of defense if everything else failed against Togekiss.
I am so gutted that David rolled a full success when Zygarde came out of the cube, because I was so desperate to give David the 10% dog form. I just thought that would be the perfect, you can have Zygarde. Yeah, it's that one though.
Oh, you would think that, wouldn't you? You would think that.
Lily Gilder writes, do you guys plan to do another War Stories vignette type episode? Maybe at the end as a glimpse into the future. I really enjoyed Wild Charge 3.
I think I said at the time when the Wild Charge 3 War Stories came out, I was like, that would be a good way to do the epilogue. Because I would imagine improving an epilogue would be, I mean, maybe okay for you three characters, because again, you've probably thought enough about what might they do, depending on what happens in the finale and all that stuff, that you might be able to riff on that. But in terms of like the wider world and other characters who we might not have quite so much at our front of our minds, I think doing a series of scripted stuff would probably be the best way to handle that.
Lily also follows up by saying, also, what would happen to Barry? I thought Kenny had sort of recruited him and he would come with the gang into the fight, but he stayed at the Conclave.
He's still a bit of a loose cannon.
He's too volatile.
He is a murderer.
Yeah, he's not in the gang.
I just almost see that Barry has sort of hung up his murdering boots. He's not fighting anymore.
Well, I think the thing about Barry, from what I remember from that last chat with Kenny in the Conclave, when he sort of said, yeah, I will assist you, was that he was mainly driven by fear of Frey, this absolute godlike poker-powered who could destroy everything that he ever knew and loved.
Barry did assist Kenny. They called him. Kenny called Barry. Got advice. Found out that Varn was afraid of fire. Yeah,
and so fire was what defeated Varn.
So there we go.
There we go.
Snowball, yeah. Snowball 93 asks, whose send-off, not including your own, is your favourite? David can pick any. I think they mean sign-off. And I think they're referring to...
As in at the end of the podcast.
The episode. That is the easiest question for me to answer ever. So I don't even know if I need to say it.
You're not allowed to say your own, Ali.
No, obviously it's not Tom's. I despise Tom's with a violent, strong passion.
David, like, David
default,
can pick any.
Default.
David
default.
Can pick any.
Is the sign-off just where you describe all the credits and stuff?
Yeah, the problem is David doesn't listen to the podcast.
David won't listen to the credits.
So
or the podcast. No, indeed.
David doesn't know what our sign-offs are.
I barely know who we are, quite frankly. I enjoy all of them equally because they are literally a sign-off. So you all do a lovely job of making us sure we're not sued. And for that, I'm grateful.
Who's your favourite, Stu? Not your own?
Oh, gosh. Can you just, both of you, performatively do them right now for me and I'll pick?
Okay, I'll start.
Make them good.
And remember, go catch them all. And by all, I mean your dreams.
Okay, nice. Ali?
Go and be the very best.
Lame!
Like, no one ever was.
Rubbish.
All right, Heron.
This is... All right, okay. Well, I mean, that's just rude, actually, isn't it? But you know what, Tom? At least it was grammatically correct, unlike your sign-off.
Wait, Stu, what's your sign-off? Have I ever listened to this podcast?
No.
Ever?
No, probably not. David, honestly, folks, has no idea what we're doing.
Mine is... Remember, adventure is out there. You just have to step into the tall grass.
See, this isn't fair because Stu has a better voice and is a voice actor for...
Like, you did something with the mic with yours.
You put it
close to your mouth.
Yeah, but I have a high-pitched chipmunk voice.
Yeah, also, Tom, you shouted lame over the top of mine, so you can wind your neck in.
Oh, the way that Tom is flailing at the end.
David, how do you think you would sign off?
Yeah, what would be your sign-off, David? David, can you do the sign-off for the last ever episode? And you can come up with your own.
Okay. I feel like we've done this before. I might not listen to the end of the episodes, but I feel we've mocked me not having a sign-off before, and I've done a sign-off, and we all went, that's pretty good. But I will prep one for the final episode. I don't know what mine would be now. I really enjoyed Stu's there, and not for the reasons that Tom tries to throw into the ring at the end in a dirty bomb. I really just like Stu's, but all of them are great.
It's all right. No one wants to catch dreams. Fine.
I genuinely thought somebody was asking who reads, obviously, we are a fan-made project, better. And I was like, all of you read it the same. All of you read it
I'd
the same.
I'd like to thank Junichi Masuda. That was good.
You all say Satoshi Tajiri equally well.
Wait, is it Tajiri? Is it Satoshi Tajiri?
Is it Tajiri?
It's Satoshi Tajiri,
in that case,
I think.
I've said it wrong every single time, and therefore I lose.
I think I ruined it for everyone. I think it's Satoshi Tajiri.
I feel like Alex is the material collective rather than the materia collective every time.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What?
I think that's a
I've
scoop.
Really opened up an old wound here.
Well, I say a lot of patron names
wait,
wrong.
What? Yeah, Ali, it's materia, no L.
Materia? Really? I've thanked the wrong person every episode.
There's a lady who owns a sewing shop called the Material Collective who's like, why do I keep getting thanked at the end of this podcast?
That's amazing.
Materia is a Final Fantasy VII thing, right?
Yes, correct.
Yes, okay. Well, there we go. It's a made-up word.
It's not a real word, exactly, but still very funny every time.
Hilarious, though. Hilarious.
Love
there we
that.
Go.
On that bombshell, Heel Scram writes, much more practical question, what's going to happen to the Patreon once the main campaign is over? We will still keep stealing your money, folks. We will lock you in for another 10 years and we'll release no Patreon content at all.
This is my take on the Patreon. I don't know if you've had any discussions about... Obviously, we're coming towards the end of this.
Yeah, we did say
now.
Me, Ali and David might just do our own thing.
Oh, thank God. I'm free. No, I don't know. I was editing an episode, literally just the intro and the midsection for an episode on Saturday, and I text Tom and I just said, God, we really do riff off each other rather well, don't we? And it's funny, we've been doing that for 5 years, and it almost seems like, well, it would be a shame to let that just go.
But it's amazing that we're going to. Wow.
And that's bravery. That takes courage,
true,
I think.
Courage.
Listen, we don't know what's coming next. Some of our lives are about to change, I was going to say irreparably, and actually maybe that's true. It's just going to be torn.
Not mine, because I don't step into the long grass. I don't want adventure. No,
no
thanks.
No,
your
adventures
sign-off
for
doesn't
you.
Speak to me.
So what, the Tom Dale playthrough of Red and Blue is just to stay in your mum's house?
Yeah.
For the you just don't leave.
Fully. Winning the game is me getting the running shoes. Run around now. Perfect.
Yeah, so I don't know. We don't know what we're going to do. It's fair to say that it's not going to look like a 100-plus episode improvised campaign as we have done here, because this has been a massive undertaking and it's taking us over 5 years and we're all very, very busy. And it's not that we don't love it. Of course we do. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. But it's just the idea of sort of going, right, now back to square one, here we go, I think is... unlikely. So it might be that we use the Patreon to just kind of put out some experimental stuff, try a few things out as and when we're free, and see what the people who are invested in us and like what we do think about it, and whether they, you know, might enjoy more of a certain thing or less of a certain thing, and we can use that as a springboard and an ideas board for what we can do going forward and what will work for us.
Well said. Jerembi's mum writes, I'd love to know if the note that Kenny had back in Raindance was find Theo or find the O, or was it pure coincidence?
That's a great one for the Gothitelle theories in our Discord. I do have a vague idea about maybe the note being answered But it all depends what happens to Kenny, so...
Mm. Yeah, it kind of depends on time travel Kenny returning, doesn't it? That's what happens there.
That is the great thing about the podcast, is that it's these kind of things we leave open in the hope that our future selves will... We actually are time travelling when we do an improv about something, because we're assuming our future self will make this make sense. Everyone on Discord is saying, what an amazing coincidence it would be if it was both. And it's like, yep, that's not planned. But again, it's sort of just the nature of improv, is you work with what you got, really. So it can seem planned when actually it's just us using what we've already got to the best of its what it can be.
We have fluked it for nearly 100 episodes.
Quick ones. Very quick ones.
Quick fire rounds.
What is the probability of one or more of the main characters dying in the end game? Stu, you answer first.
I don't think I should ever make a decision about a player character death. I think that has to come from the player. I think it can be suggested, but I think it has to come from then. And okay. To be honest, you've all flagged it. So I was going to say,
David, if we accept that all three are dying, Theo, are you dying first, second, or third?
Ooh, am I Ron on the chess pieces? Am I Hermione with the potions? Or am I Harry with the mirror?
You're James and Lily in chapter one. You're already dead.
Will you stop referencing Harry Potter, David?
I would say if Theo was going to die anywhere, it's second. That's my vibe. I think it's a 50-50% chance.
Theo, I love the idea that Theo just looks at the first death and decides whether it was dramatic enough to follow up with or not.
It's absolutely that. It's absolutely that.
Also, Theo loves to one-up Brandy, so it makes sense.
I think it's Brandy first, Theo second, and Kenny third. Possibly having killed the other two.
Good to know.
Next question. Geo is a cold steel writes, what's your favourite and least favourite character voices and why?
Munchlax.
Is your favourite, obviously. Mm. Okay, good.
My least favourite is Luann, because it just destroys me. And every time Luann's in a scene, I'm like, oh no.
My least favourite was Phillips, because I always thought I could do it, and then I'd go into it and I'd be like, this is impossible. I just cannot do this.
I genuinely think that's because it's Stuart Clarke's attempt at an accent that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's an accent I recognise, but it's not at all.
It's not. No, it's not.
It's actually completely made up. Yep. David, you don't do accents, so it's fine.
My least favourite was those underbite people that we did. Oh, they were so annoying.
Which
oh,
people? My Which
word. They horrible. We what, hated
the
them.
The Tom Dales.
The Dales.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh,
to be honest,
absolute
agree.
Absolute worst.
The fact that they had lockjaw, I think that was their thing, was yes, that they couldn't yes. move yeah. their mouths. Yeah, that was poor from us.
You know when you're in the dentist and they're like doing the hygienist appointment and your mouth is aching from how long you've been in the seat? And it's like, that's how I felt after doing the Tom Dales.
I'm amazed they made the edit. I'm amazed.
Yeah, me too. Finally, Snowball asks, so what actually happened to Varn to make him half Ariados other than just shine?
Shrug.
Stu? Shrug.
Shrug. What happened to him? Well, I think we know the Pokemon League were into some weird stuff. I think it was related to the Zorcario of the Abomination and experiments that were done thereafter on that beast, that creature that was killed in the Helsing Hunt, and this idea that things can be stitched together. That's not really an element of poker powers. That's something new in Formia. Because Varn was involved with that and had Zorcario and the head and everything from the hunt.
Yeah, I just think Varn, because they were so rich, he'd had this plan in place for ages.
Yeah, it was like a failsafe.
It was like free cryogenesis. Varn had re-put money into this technology to do it, and the spider body was ready and waiting.
Love that.
He thought he'd be an old man, but it had to just happen. After that fact.
And he loved spiders. He was really into spiders. So he chose the spider body, which was weird.
Yeah, if you listen to the nuances, it's all there, the spider love. It's all there. Oh, yeah. You just really need to listen to it.
The design on his hat, eight legs.
They weren't horns. They were mandibles. They were little spider teeth.
If you rearrange Varn's name, it spells I love spiders.
Oh my God, it does.
It does. And
thank you so much for listening to The Reflect. As David mentioned in the beginning.
Now
he's trying.
Yep. He's still trying. There we
Here
go.
Crow. Arachnids, never not vile. There we go.
Do your own Varn anagrams at home, folks, and we'll reflect again at the very end of the podcast.
This is it. Okay, last reflect before the end.
Wow.
See you guys.
See you at the end.
See you at the finish line. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.